So the goal of Buddhism to liberate either just oneself from the round of cyclic existence, from the round of existence, to liberate oneself from suffering, so-called, therefore, one would follow, you know, the so-called individual liberation path, or the universal so-called vehicle, aspiring to perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. Therefore, not just liberating oneself, but aspiring to that liberation with altruistic mind, having in mind that one is not going to liberate oneself, you know, unless take everybody else, you know, all sentient beings together. So lead, you know, everyone else. So the altruistic, so therefore generating the altruistic mind. So, but whether one liberates just oneself, or whether one achieves enlightenment, aspire to enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, there is still a freedom that one is seeking. The freedom from ignorance, you know, and the klesha and the karma. So, then as we, but then one here. So then when one hears this, the concept, you know, come across this concept of karma, then we have this, you know, this, the question arise, you say, you know, it seems everything is determined with karma, therefore, where is the freedom to liberate, you know, oneself? So, see, there is the freedom that one seeks, and then it seems that also one needs freedom as well to liberate oneself, which means that if you have the freedom, what type of freedom you are seeking, you know? So the freedom, for example, the person who is in jail is not free. And that's why, you know, you break through. So how does the person break through? With willingness, you know, with a strong will, yeah? So the person who is in jail is imprisoned. Yeah, he's not free. He's in prison, and somehow he's able to escape due to the strong will. You know? That's what makes the person to find a way to free oneself. You know, the strong will. Yeah. So to find a way out. So, so when we talk about the, so what is the source of being imprisoned? Yeah, to feel imprisoned and then seeking liberation. So everything is within the so-called mind. So everything arrives within so-called mind, mind, body. So the world. When you talk about the world, you know, in Buddhism, you're referring to body, mind. And with these two, particularly, the mind. So it is the mind that one is trying to free. So in order to achieve this so-called liberation, so there are two processes. So one is by taming and one by training. So there are two things that one does, tame and train. So in order to train, when we talk, So this, the word, the term training the mind is applied as referring to practice like compassion, love, altruism, patience. So when you are practicing this, when you are trying to generate this quality, this is a question of training the mind. Yeah. So one is training the mind, making the mind strong. Yeah. So it's through thinking. So the compassion, love, is a thinking process. Observing, reflecting, by seeing the suffering, one reflect, generate the thought, you know, the wish, the thought of how wonderful. If all living beings were free, or if all human beings were free from suffering, or being endowed with happiness, may I be able, you know, may I be able to do that? You know? So I will try to fulfill, you know, that purpose, that thought. So take the responsibility. So all this is as a result of mental process. So the training of the mind, so in Tibetan Buddhism, we have this particular system, school, lineage, you know, called the mind training. You know? So in the mind training, teachings, method, that's what one learns. One learns to develop and increase the compassion, develop and increase love, and particularly develop and increase the altruistic mind. So. But since we are talking about, here we are talking about a strong mind, so therefore the love that we are talking about, the compassion, the altruism, it cannot be an emotional thing. Yeah, it cannot be saving the world, you know, an emotional saving the world, a savior, you know. So it's not like becoming a savior, the hero, you know, like, anyway, an emotional thing. So these are the characteristic of love, compassion, and altruism. It's very cool. In a way. It has to be cool. Otherwise, it's very difficult to work effectively. Yeah, to help others effectively, if one is too emotional, it's very difficult. Yeah. So the thing is, one cannot identify too much. You know, the love, but compassion particularly. Compassion is that mind that feels other people suffering, right? The mind that feels other people suffering, we can say, like, identify with them, you know, it's sympathetic, you know? But still the person cannot be too much involved, yeah? It needs to keep some space, yeah? It needs to keep some space, otherwise is to otherwise it would be very difficult, you know, to be to help, you know, so to understand, let's say, the situation, yeah, so the mind becomes too confused, too engaged, yeah, therefore this word that we use, one cannot be too engaged, yeah. So you need certain space. And so that's why the need for taming the mind first. So first one tames the mind and then train the mind. Yeah. So with therefore the taming it involves the knowing of the mind. Yeah. So we know, one knows the mind when trying to tame. So taming means tame the mind. What does it mean? It means being with it, yeah, being with it, with the so-called experience, yeah, not just this abstracting mind. So when we talk about mind, there are the various experiences. One needs to sit with it, be with it, without reacting, yeah, without reacting to, you know, either by clinging or aversion. You know, therefore sit. One sit with this. Therefore one knows, so one knows the characteristic. So one knows the mind. And And sitting with the mind, no, the taming, so when you say taming means sitting with it, is not an easy thing, because we see the mind is very wild, is a wild wild animal. So when one is taming a wild animal, it doesn't tame the animal by putting the animal, you know, in a confined place and oneself, you know, outside. So when one tames a wild animal, it stays with the animal. Oneself locks himself together with the animal, he fends the place and stays in a narrow place with a wild animal. So this is the way, therefore there is the risk. So the animal that kick, bite, rebel, yeah. And the person try to quite calm, you know, so through different skill, neither getting too close nor too distant. So that's in taming the mind, like exactly like taming the wild animal, not too close, then there is a risk to be harmed by the wild horse, whatever it may be. Too distant, it's difficult to subdue, yeah, the animal. Therefore, you need the right distance. So in taming the mind, same. One need, he build up, he create the right, the proper distance, the right distance, not too close, not too far, yeah. And so that is through, you know, through the mental factor of mindfulness that one create that space, which is neither too far nor too close. Yeah. So taming, and through the taming, one knows. Yeah. So, is in the taming of the mind. Training, let's say, yeah, in the taming of the mind practice. So, the person is not trying to create good state of mind, virtuous state of mind. Is not trying to create anything. The person is concerned with the understanding. With the concern is with, as we mentioned during the retreat, tasting. You know, the flavor, this mind. So that's what is when you start. So the 51 mental factors. So how do we know? So in this so-called, this 51 mental factors, so we read about them, or we study them, okay, we get some explanation, but then we have to experience them. So there are something that we experience in our mind. It's not something, you know, to achieve, right? It's not, this mental factor is not something somewhere that we have to collect them, you know? Some to collect, some to get, you know, not to get near to. These are mental factors that arise in our mind. Yeah, these mental factors arise in our mind, and they have different characteristics, different taste, you know, different flavor. Mm-hmm. Some they have very good flavor, you know. Some they are wholesome. Some they make the mind comfortable. Some make the mind happy. Others make the mind uncomfortable, unhappy, unpleasant. Yeah. So we have a vague idea when we read them. So we do have some idea what these mental factors, what they are, what they do. But it's not the same when we actually experience as they arise. Therefore, one experiences them in meditation, in a context of a long retreat. And as we see, the attitude is leaving the mind. One leave the mind as it is, so one just sit, and things do happen. So we don't need to create, as we said, things arise in our mind without asking any permission to come, without anyone behind. And so it's a dependent, you know, there are dependent phenomena. They arise and they go. So the meditator is attentive is attentive in order to, when this manifests, so one knows, yeah, feels them. And so it spends some time, you know. So the person doesn't come to a quick conclusion, this is bad, this is wrong. So since we have a vague idea that anger is bad and so forth, attachment is bad, but actually one spend time, So when they arise, to sit with them, till one has a direct experience, so generate really ascertainment of the real nature, so how harmful and how beneficial. So this is this is taming the mind. So when we tame the mind, it involves that. The taming the mind is not just stopping something. It's not about stopping the mind. Taming the mind is not about stopping of anger or stopping of attachment. So the taming of the mind is sitting with it. It involves the sitting, and therefore, with that particular attitude, be mindful, create space, not being involved. So then one knows, therefore the taming of the mind, as we say, is about knowledge, right? It's not simply not allowing something to arise. It's not simply stopping something. It's one is knowing, one is knowing, it's knowing the mind. So that's why we say that the characteristic of this mental factor, mindfulness, is actually knowledge, So that's when we say taming, That's the meaning of taming the mind, is the same thing, knowing the mind, Even then, when we know the mind, so one knows, feel, experience, then one knows what needs to be abandoned, what needs to be cultivated. So then we can then move in the process of increasing, through appreciation. So one appreciate a certain mental state, and one trying to nourish them, nourish, increase the power, keep them, so cultivate them. And with regard to the others, not allow them to arise. So that, so training the mind. So therefore, with taming, we know, and with training, we change. So therefore, the training the mind is about transforming the mind. Eventually, one transforms. So transform the mind, so when you talk about compassion, love, that is transforming. So it's a process of transforming the mind. Because we do have, so therefore at the beginning, so that's why we cannot say to the mind, see, we can lead certain meditation, but then other type of meditation we have to be careful, because the mind, as we mentioned during the retreat, the mind doesn't want to be told. So the mind doesn't want to be to do this, do that, right? The mind is like, don't do, do it. Therefore, there are certain things that we can tell to the mind. So to the mind we can tell, be mindful, be attentive. The mind can handle that, right? The mind can handle, be attentive, do not cling, do not suppress. This we can handle it, we accept, right? The mind accept. But then, when with very little experience, but then we cannot tell the mind, be compassionate. Be loving, be caring. It's not an easy thing. Sometimes it feels like the easiest thing in this world, be compassionate. To be compassionate is not easy. It's not an easy thing. So there are certain things the mind depends. It goes with the mood. So even if the mind, the point is, even when the mind is not a good mood, it doesn't want to really see, doesn't want to be here, you can still say, be disciplined, be attentive, and so forth. It's all right. But if the mind is in a really bad mood, and where there is just me, my problems, and now think of the suffering of others. Suffering of others, gosh, I'm so miserable, leave me alone. I want to, it's me. It's me that I'm in pain. So it's difficult to tell the mind to love, which means we are telling the mind to think about others. The mind, when it is in a bad mood, doesn't want to think about others. It wants something for me. Yeah, tell me how to, you know, tell me how to alleviate, you know, this misery. So then you can say, well, detach yourself. Yeah, stay back. Don't get involved. Yeah, don't engage. So the person says, oh, I like that. You know, because it's something about you, yeah, about me. This maybe can help me. You know, the mind likes to do that. Something that helps me. Yeah. Yeah. So in this process, therefore, the mind. So we begin, as we say, to sit. We sit with the mind. Then there are moments, because as we say, things do arise in the mind. Therefore, there are moments when there is a little compassion. Yeah. There are moments when some compassion does arise. Yeah. Because as we say, it's not a question. You know. Because you have to be, anyway. It's true. It's not a question of I doing something, dependent arising, and therefore everything, including love, compassion, altruism, there are moments when one feels the suffering of others. Yeah, there are. You see it, maybe not often. So when one experiences a moment of love, then one is mindful. So it's not about trying to create oneself, but is aware of that. So it feels. Oh, how does it feel? How does it feel? So then, yes. So the person is encouraged, you know, to sit with it, observe it, be mindful of it. How do you feel? Well, how do you feel this? We don't say that. How do you feel? That's when you are sitting, you know, stretched on a bed, you know, with someone listening to you, with some therapist or something. How do you feel? It's not like that. Not that, how do you feel? So, you know, how. Yeah, you are mindful. Yeah, you can say, how it feels. So, with love. You know, so the person knows that's how it feels with love. Then, when there is compassion, you know, if it happened to experience compassion, then one is mindful and knows how it feels with compassion. So, the more one knows, then the more one wish to cultivate, increase, yeah? So therefore there must be an initial experience, you know? So there must be an initial experience when one feels it. Yeah, then one encourage that. So to encourage, to nourish, yeah? So otherwise, you have to be very careful, as we say at the beginning, one has to be very careful with what is stealing to the mind, you know, what tells the mind. Of course, no, there are also depends on individual. You know, some people are inclined to have this thought of love, compassion. You know, there are naturally arise due to some past imprints. So whatever the reason, the case. So there are people who are more inclined to, but in general, as you say, there are certain things that we can tell the mind to do it, and there are certain things to be careful. Particularly, see, as the Buddha said, you know, as the Buddha said, and we mentioned in one of the sessions, difficult it is indeed to be virtue, but very easy to be evil. Yeah. So the mind very easily follow the, you know, the negative thoughts or the bad thoughts, the bad, you know, because of strong habit. But you find very difficult. You see, we find very difficult to generate virtuous state of mind. Yeah. Therefore, it is a slow, you know, process. It's something that one is to introduce, something that one is to feel. Yeah. So something, as I say, either one is natural like that. Or is something that one is to be introduced, yeah, to the good state. And this is how one is introduced to good state of the wholesome, you know, state of mind by observing them, by being mindful and being aware and see how it feels. So this is, in order not to feel, as we mentioned yesterday with regard to faith, in order not to perceive it as a religious thing, yeah, like a religious trip or religious trip thing, you know, the opium of the society, right, the people, as if I'm just taking refuge because, you know, I can't stay in the world, therefore I take refuge in religion. But religion, in general, is for the strong people. Yeah, it's not for the weak. It's not for the weak one. Yeah. So, therefore, His Holiness Dalai Lama often explain whenever he talk about, particularly talking about altruism, like bodhicitta, compassion, always presented from the point of view of being a necessity. Yeah. Not that being a Buddhist or being a Christian, so being a duty, the duty of a Buddhist, the duty of a Christian, the duty of a religious person is to be altruistic, to be compassionate. Is not from the point of view, you know, of simply being a good, you know, person. Yeah. Is from the point of view of necessity. Yeah. So it is a necessity to be compassionate and to be to have love. It is a necessity because it is good for oneself, you know, as I already mentioned that. It's good for oneself. So that's why it is emphasized. You know? So if you look, one would say, if you look at this mental state when they arise and we sit with it, you will see how good it is for you. Yeah? Therefore it's completely devoid. Yeah, it's completely, really devoid of any religious connotation. Then, of course, it's presented within a religious context. Yeah, but the actual practice itself, the training, everything, you know, is a very practical, yeah, thing. Yeah, is a it is a training. Yeah, so it is a training. So it's good for oneself, and therefore these mental factors are supposed to be contemplated in order to see what is, you know, those that have to be abandoned and those that have to be cultivated. So then we've seen the five omnipresent. So then the ascertaining, that where the object is very clear, there's the object is certain with regard to that mind, it is a certain object. As we say, it is the type of this ascertaining mental factors that which give a duration and purpose in life. You know, both we can say, you know, worldly and a spiritual context. You know, first, as we say, the aspiration, which is the result of faith. You know, it is as a result of faith that, so with faith, as we explained yesterday, so faith also it has, there are three types of faith, the so-called admiring faith, the believing faith, and aspiring faith. So the last one is aspiring, certainly, as it leads to that. So the admiring faith is the type of mind, is the type of faith that it takes, you know, object like the quality, so that takes to the mind the quality like compassion, love, or the quality of mindfulness. So it takes the quality as its object and it has admire. So it admires this object. Therefore, this type of faith, it is said to be, is like as an antidote. Is that which, for example, it becomes the antidote for jealousy. Normally, because this is, when we say admiring faith, it's not just the quality in abstract. In regard to people, as we observe certain people, we come in contact with certain people, with compassion, with love, with certain qualities, one generates faith with regard to these qualities that are in the mind of this person, not just compassion like that by itself, you know, that actually we see with our eyes, people with that quality, so admiring them for that. So that becomes, you know, an antidote to envy, jealousy. And therefore, this particular type of the stage, the faith, is said to be like, and the faith is said to be like that stone that when you put in a particular stone, that when you put in the polluted water, is that we clarify, you know? I don't know whether it exists, there's such a thing, but they say there is a particular type of stone that when you put in the polluted water, it clears, no? It clears the water. What do you mean? What do we have here? When we put the water, the sterilize, how do you call it? Purifying water, yes. Purified, yeah. It's a purifying thing, no? The faith. So this admiring faith, yeah, this admiring faith has a purifying effect on the mind, clears, cleans the mind. And then the faith or belief, you know? The faith or belief is a type of faith that is devoid of doubt, yeah? So faith or belief. So when, again, another characteristic of faith is the opposite of confidence. So faith or belief is the confident mind, therefore no doubt. So the mind free from doubt. And then the aspiring one, yeah? So the aspiring faith. So the last is the aspiring. So by seeing, the aspiring faith is the type of faith that one begin to believe that, oh, maybe this is achievable. So the aspiring faith when, see, therefore, it's not just faith, it's a very organic thing, isn't it? So therefore, faith is an organic that moves. At the beginning it's like this, then in the middle it's like that. It's something that moves and creates, right? So it's not just a static momental faith, that's it. So it is organic, it creates, moves, and does thing, yeah? So something that does, it's a functional thing. So in the last stage, let's say, of faith, the last or towards, the faith eventually moves to becoming aspiration. Yeah, so faith eventually transform, you know, like the seed. We say that seed, no, the faith is like a rich seed, but then the seed is to become a sprout, right? And eventually, so this faith, so it begins to sprout, becomes aspiration, begin to aspire. In the sense, the person then begin to think that, well, that is achievable, you know, that thing I can also achieve. Maybe I can also achieve that thing. You know? So we'll aspire. Yeah? So that's the quality of aspiration. The characteristic of aspiration is the mind that begins to think, well, you know, maybe I can do it. I would like to. I'll try. So faith, there is the faith that meet, you know, the faith aspiration, there are three types of aspiration. They say the aspiration that wish to meet. Yeah? So the aspiration that meet, no wish to meet this quality, so that wish to come in contact, you know, with this quality, love, compassion, you know, this spiritual quality, the wholesome quality. And then there is the aspiration that you wish not to be separated. The second type of aspiration that he does not wish to be separated from this good quality, particularly those already generated in one's mind, so one wish not to be separated. And then the aspiration that seek, you know, that is looking for, the seek, that is the third type of aspiration, seeking, you know, to achieve. So therefore, like in the context of faith, same with the context of aspiration, again, it is a process of development, yeah? So this is, this was very much, this is what we find, you know, in the Abhidharma. So the Abhidharma scripture is about things that all this comes when you talk, you know, aspiration, sensation, all these mental factors. There has been experience first. It's not that one just sat, you know, in front of a table, you know, it's just, okay, aspiration. Why no aspiration like this, you know? you know, fate, what fate it could be. Yeah, like that. You know? So it's not that one thought about and then wrote it down. Yes, you know, some some idea. So it's through experience. So the person sit, yeah, and through the sitting experience. So fate do arise, and then one as one keep observing, see that fate arises as one stage is like this, as another stage is like that, and then one sees experience, and then it moves and it becomes aspiration. Then the aspiration also it moves and becomes constantly. So the mind is like that. It's not static, you know. It's not like fate, aspiration, you know, like a static thing. It's, as we say, organic moves. You have different aspects. So in a way, it leads. You know, that's why we say these five that which give direction and purpose to life. You know. So then, aspiration, it becomes what we call appreciation. The second, yeah, appreciation. So appreciation is that particular mental factor that it find complete ascertainment with regard to the practice, you know, and it doesn't, and to eliminate, you know, the type of mind that eliminate any doubt with regard what I'm doing, you know, this type of practice being good for me, yeah. So appreciation is that which make the person continue, not to come back, yeah, not to degenerate, yeah, and, not to degenerate the practice. Yeah? To strengthen that which strengthen the practice and makes not to degenerate. So therefore the appreciation is the type of mind that we can, no matter how many difficulties, is the type of mind that is understand, that is right thing, right? If we put in the context of, you know, meditation, yeah, in the context of practicing, so where one experiences difficulties, hardship, you know, it's challenging, and yet you stay. You see, during the person does a longer retreat, and you see it's difficult to sit, the discipline is difficult, lots of mental and physical unpleasantness, and yet you sit, and yet still you stay, you don't leave. What makes you not to leave, you see, what makes you not to give up, you know? What are you doing in this particular context? You know, the practice is this factor of appreciation, yeah. Because there is appreciation, you know, just get up and leave. You know, after the first day, the second day, sometimes it happens. You know, after a couple of days, the person, you know, is too confused. You know, because I don't understand what he's talking about, what he's all about. It's very difficult. I'm sweating. You know. So feel full of pain, I don't understand the purpose, yeah, so that is lack of appreciation, yeah. When this mental factor of appreciation takes place, then is that which that which make the mind to stick to the practice, not to give up, rather, yeah, that which makes the mind not to give up and continue. Because there is appreciation, so one does not give up, yeah. No matter how difficult, yeah. So no matter how difficult, which means, so appreciation, therefore, means one sees the benefit. He sees that it's good. I'm doing something good, yeah. But the person somehow sees that he's doing something good, and no matter how painful, no matter how struggling, you know, and so forth, stick to it. So that's the mental factor of appreciation. So this is not one of these mental factors here, but is that which lead to effort. Yes. So this aspiration leads to effort. So without aspiration, we can never apply any effort. Yeah? So effort is possible because of faith and because of aspiration. So then the appreciation together, so that's what we one experience, you know, in the retreat, yeah, in the practice. A certain point, having realized the person strong aspiration, then we see that then there is the challenge. So the challenge of sitting, the following of a schedule, the timetable, and so forth. So then, in order to apply the effort, to make an effort, it needs patience. Yeah? So it is the patience that makes so the aspiration become a reality, right? So first we have aspiration, but then this aspiration must become a reality. So what is the thing in between, yeah? Aspiration and becoming a reality. The transition, right? It's a word, you know? The transition. It is patience, you know, effort. So it's patience, it makes effort possible, and through effort, then becomes a reality. So through effort, one experience, you know, whatever one is aspiring for, yeah? Aspire to. Therefore, it goes like that. Faith, aspiration, then effort and fruition. So then there are the third factor within this five ascertaining factor where its object, you know, that is its object well ascertained and clear or certain with regard to its object is mindfulness, right? Mindfulness. So mindfulness is that which hold the object, yeah? Mindfulness is that which does not allow, you know, the object to be lost, yeah. Does not allow for the object to be lost. That's mindfulness, you know, the sati. So the holding of the object, and therefore, because of the holding, there is no forgetfulness. Which holding of the object means that the person it does not forget the object. And therefore it becomes no distraction. So it's the factor that makes the mind undistracted. So having generated faith, having generated aspiration, wanting to do, so in order to be successful and for the effort to be fruitful, so we need to do things without distraction. If we are distracted, it's very difficult to channel the mind properly, yeah? So therefore, no distraction. So what take care of that is mindfulness. Yeah? Therefore, the mindfulness make the mind not distracted, present. And not only that, the mind that is the characteristic also of non-superficiality, yeah? Non-superficiality. Whenever there is mindfulness, the mind is never trivial, yeah? Whenever there is mindfulness, the mind is present. Therefore, the mind is not a trivial mind, yeah? So the mind that is present, mindful, attentive. So, it's a very strong, yeah? It's a strong mind, it's well anchored, yeah? To the object, to the present. It's a well anchored mind on the present. So, and because of that, therefore, it's not confused. Yeah? So the mind, the mindfulness mind is never confused. Yeah? No matter, at our level, it's very short. Therefore, it's a second, a glimpse. But in that glimpse, in that short moment of mindfulness, whenever the mindfulness is present, there is always clarity, presence. In that particular moment, there is no affliction. The affliction are stopped. Yeah? The so-called disturbance are stopped. You know? Unfortunately, they are very short, this moment. But this is one trying to strengthen and to make it, to expand, to make it longer, more and more. So, but when the mind, in that moment of mindfulness, the mind is clear. Yeah? Clear in the sense, knows what is taking place. Yeah? Not in a visual sense. Clear in the sense that one is in control. Therefore, that's what is controlling, factor. The word control, so the controlling factor is that, is be mindful, is presence. Any time one is present, is always under control. No matter how angry, no matter how full of lust, no matter how jealousy or whatever, no matter how unhappy, whenever there is mindfulness, the person is aware. Therefore, the person, this is anger, you know, because I'm angry, Not when it's already too late, but in the moment when there is still time to stop it, in that moment, No, when you're already fuming, I'm angry, that's too late, that's no mindfulness, That is late, you're still, you know, be more difficult. So it's the particular when you catch, just before or just after a reason. So the clarity in that sense. It's not that nothing's happening. Things happen, but one is knows that what is taking place. Anger is taking place. Jealousy is taking place. Unhappiness is taking place. So one is very clear with regard to what is taking place. And therefore, they are the quality of mindfulness that one can, has the freedom to direct the mind. So they are the quality of mindfulness that one can direct the mind to whatever object one wish. So directing the mind to whatever object one wish, which is the, the fourth. So then the fourth of this, is concentration, right? So concentration is the next mental factor. So the cause of concentration is mindfulness, because without the ability of holding the object, we can never place the mind on one object. So that's concentration. So we can place the mind on one object when we have well developed the mental factor of mindfulness. So the mental mindfulness is that power to direct the mind on the chosen object. The chosen object without distraction. So is therefore in the context of ethic, this mental factor of mindfulness is that which is like they say it's like a police, it's like the one who makes sure that you don't do wrong things. In the context of ethic, keep a good morality, good ethic, the mindfulness that which makes sure that you don't do wrong things. Therefore, it's called, we call it is conscientiousness. It's become to be conscientious, the one who makes sure that we don't do wrong thing. In the context of concentration, is that which make to remember the object that we know, that which allow, that which keeps, the objects, no forgetfulness. So then, we can concentrate. Concentration is that the ability to place the mind on a chosen object for as long as one wish without interruption. Therefore, preparing the ground for the fifth mental factor of the, of this ascertaining mental factor, the five, so to mean knowledge. And this is the type of knowledge is our ordinary knowledge. So knowledge is the ability to investigate, the ability to investigate without distraction, properly investigate without distraction. That is possible when the mind is well concentrated. But here, the type of concentration is that the type of concentration that mind dwelling on an object for as long as we wish, as long as one wish, having that, having certain quality with the mind, with the body and mind that is supple and therefore blissful. Yeah, is a particular mind, is a blissful mind that sit on the object for as long as one wish, and the type of a mind that can even concentrate, can just forget what is the day today. Can see, there are stories of there are stories of yogi with a qualified, you know, shamatha, samadhi, with a real samadhi, that that the attendant, you know, they bring the food, you know, and then after 1 week they open, after 1 week or a couple of weeks they open their eyes, and they think and they wonder, how come it's so cold? How come it's moldy? For them it's like as if 5 minutes just passed. You know, but actually it's 1 week or 2 weeks. They always say, and they may even scold. They may even scold the attendant. You know, you bring this type of food. They just 5 weeks, a week, a month may pass without realizing. So, the mind of samadhi is like that, easy. So in that sense, easy. The mind stays on the object for as long as we wish without the slightest discomfort, and the time just pass. So it's not like now, you know. Is he ringing the bell? Not yet. Forgot it. He must have forgot to ring the bell. You know. At the same time, you may even begin to hallucinate. You know, I heard it. Did he ring the bell? Or maybe not. Or maybe yes. So the pain is so strong that one begin to hallucinate. Yeah. So. Hopefully it's not the case here. So I'm trying to make it short. So the session are very short. Yeah. Yeah, so the need for samadhi, concentration, the purpose is therefore to be able to sit comfortably for as much as one wish, for as long as one wish, with a blissful mind. Therefore one can take any object, you know, or contemplation and really you know, and penetrate, yeah? So realize. Therefore, realizations based on that mind, they're easy and quick. Yeah, the realizations, yeah. Concentration, so there are different objects of concentration. There are many objects of concentration. There are infinite objects of concentration. There are objects of concentration that an enlightened being, through his skillful means, yeah, can, you know, advise, you know, to. The quality of the enlightened being is not just the altruism, is altruism and the strong wish to free and the actual method and so forth, but is the particular quality of the Buddha, of the enlightened being, is the skillful means, therefore knowing exactly what suits you. Yeah? For example, at the time of Buddha, so to generate concentration, that's, you know, you sit cross-legged, spine straight, you do certain things, and that's it. Yeah, that's what you do. Yeah? But, for example, at the time of Buddha, there was one person, a monk, that Buddha realized, that Buddha saw that for him, this method didn't work. For him, he could easily achieve samadhi by lying down, you know? Therefore, Buddha said, no, you lie down. Yeah? And so he practiced and achieved samadhi, this person, by lying down. Imagine if he tell us that. You now lay down. Yeah, well, good night. You know? So you just close your eyes. Yeah, samadhi. Yeah. In the dream, yes. So we'll experience samadhi in the dream straight away. But for that particular person, it was suitable, yeah? But not for everybody. Therefore, each time, same at the time of Buddha, there were many stories of students, you know, the disciple monk, really dull, you know, like dull. But, I can't relate to that myself, so when I hear this word dull, there was one monk, no matter what Buddha told him, couldn't get it, didn't get. You know, he told this, told that, didn't get. So then the Buddha told him, he gave him a piece of white cloth, you know, clean white cloth. Then he said, just sit over there, you know, just bring it up, and just face it, you know, put it against the sun, and stay like this, you know, put this piece of cloth against the sun, just stay like that. That's the Buddha's advice to this monk, yeah? And the monk did, so he took a piece of cloth, white cloth, immaculate, and he's standing, you know, against the sun, like this. And then there's a, I think it was an old monk. Then suddenly, slowly, he said that he became sweating, and then the sweat, you know, went through the cloth, slowly, staining the cloth and everything. And then it came to his mind, you know? And to his mind, it came, you know, the nature. So the mind basically is pure, but is stained by the adventitious affliction, you know? So just simply, therefore, no matter how dull, stupid that person was, Buddha saw that, yes, but if you do this, you can really go, you know? You can see, you know, the meaning of the Dharma very quickly, not through words. If I explain you through words, you don't understand anything. So do this. And so this man, this monk, he just realized the nature of the mind just like that. So he saw that like a piece of cloth, clean. That's what the mind is. Basically, fundamentally, the mind is like that. Clean, clear, pure. It is stained by attachment, anger, you know, jealousy and so forth. Due to tendency, ignorance, so forth. The mind is basically pure, it is stained. You know, exactly. So this man, this monk, realized through that. You know? So therefore, there are many ways, because we are all different, therefore there are infinite dharmas. Yeah? There is not just one dharma. And then, therefore, that's what we mentioned yesterday. That's why we have many religions. Yeah, there are many religions because there are different people. One religion, one thing cannot suit everybody, right? One thing cannot suit everybody. That's why there are different things for different needs. Yeah. Therefore, as a Buddhist, one can say, "Well, they're all manifestations of the Buddha, Allah, manifestation of the Buddha." You know, you can be a bit chauvinist and say, "Jesus, a manifestation of Buddha." So they're all. You know, some people think like that, but. It is, anyway, in accordance to different, you know, need. Yeah? So the Dharma, therefore, Buddha taught many dharmas. Yeah? He taught many methods in accordance to different individual. So therefore, when we study the commentary, so when one receives teachings, so for the sake of clarity, hear that, we have to do like this, like this, like this, like that. But then, when it comes to the actual practice and the person, you know, communicate, talk with the teacher, with the guru, then it's very different. Then a very skilled, you know, enlightened guru, you know, goes beyond the scripture, yeah, beyond the commentary, and can give something which may appear very unconventional, you know, not even taught in the scripture, but is suitable for that particular person. Yeah. So, therefore, there are as many dharmas, there are living beings, there are as many objects of concentration, there are living beings. Yeah? It depends. So in general, we talk of external, internal, object of concentration. So sometimes people begin to establish, you know, training concentration by observing external objects. So putting something outside, you know, and looking at it for a long time. But it's mentioned, but you rarely you find this type of, you know, you find people doing that, you know. So some lama they may advise that, some people do. But in general, the object of concentration is internal, yeah, is an inner object, which can be either inner, external, or internal, in the sense, a visualized, you know, a visualized object externally, like visualizing an image of Buddha, or visualize a flower, an image that one visualizes outside of oneself, in front, for example, yeah. Or inner object, so that one visualize within, you know, inside one's body, yeah. So there are different, so object in terms of where to place, yeah. Then there are objects with regard to a particular object, yeah. So internal, external, yeah. Then there are, in terms of within the body, particular spot, the crown, the throat, the heart, the navel. So the best spot in the sense, it is safe spot for engaging in concentration is the navel, yeah. Therefore, trying to establish a shamatha or concentration by focusing on something, no, the crown, so-called chakra, or at the throat, or particularly the heart, you know, is to be, so only as a consumed, we can say, meditator, when one is advanced. Otherwise, at the beginning, is advisable, the person, the object is to be at the level of, you know, at the level of the navel, or like four fingers below the navel, inside. That is the most safe spot. You may not get anything, but also you don't get, you know, you don't get lung, yeah? So nerve, you know, you don't upset the nerve system. So concentrating here, at the heart, the throat, or the crown, can upset, you know, the nerve system. Of course, it's not advisable, but the navel, you know, is saved, yeah, it's safe. I think we stop. We stop here for now.